This is the Bible Book Club. I'm Heather.
And I'm Susan.
And we're in the book of 1 Samuel.
Welcome to the club.
Well, in chapter 24, Saul is chasing David through the desert of En-Gedi, trying to kill him because he thinks David will take the kingdom away from him. And, well, he just might. David is suffering, always on the run from Saul, never comfortable, and he's far away from family and from the Israelite people he loved and he wanted to serve. Well, while he's hiding in that cave, David had his first test and temptation out in the wilderness. He gets the chance to kill Saul, and he could then end this miserable existence that he has being chased into caves. David is tempted, but he stops short, and he uses his knife to just cut off the edge of Saul's robe instead of taking his life. David passed the first test. Yay. Saul momentarily sees the light, and he realizes that David is actually a righteous man and that he will probably be king one day.
In this episode, two stories are going to take place. One is super short. Samuel is going to die. And then David will have his second test in the wilderness. The second test is the temptation to avenge himself. David was anointed, but not appointed king. As a threat to the current king, David was treated as a defector and outlaw, resulting in disrespect and ill treatment by many. It was a difficult position to be in, and the contempt is going to really get to him this episode. In this test, David will be tempted to kill those who disrespect him, which is exactly what Saul did to the priests of Nob. All right, scene one, the death of Samuel.
Chapter 25. Now, Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah.
That's all we know about his death. But Samuel's death is going to leave a gaping spiritual hole in the nation of Israel. Since the death of Moses, there has not been a man of God as great as Samuel. He served as prophet, judge, and priest for Israel. His service to the Lord began when he was a child of about 4 years old, and it never ended. He transitioned Israel from ruling judges to a monarchy, even though he wasn't happy about it. He anointed, mentored, and cared for both Saul and David. Samuel left a lasting legacy of faithfulness and obedience to God. His name is mentioned 128 times in the Old Testament and 3 times in the New Testament. According to the Apostle Paul in Acts 13, Samuel is a principal player on the timeline from Abraham to Christ. Listen to this.
Standing up, Paul motioned with his hand and said, "Fellow Israelites and you Gentiles who worship God, listen to me. The God of the people of Israel chose our ancestors. He made the people prosper during their stay in Egypt. With mighty power, he led them out of the country. For about 40 years, he endured their conduct in the wilderness. And he overthrew 7 nations in Canaan, giving their land to his people as their inheritance. All this took about 450 years. After this, God gave them judges until the time of Samuel the prophet. Then the people asked for a king, and he gave them Saul, son of Kish, of the tribe of Benjamin, who ruled for 40 years. After removing Saul, he made David their king. God testified concerning him, 'I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will do everything I want him to do.' From this man's descendants, God has brought to Israel the Savior Jesus, as he promised."
Samuel was a great. He served a crucial role in the bigger Bible timeline from Abraham to Jesus, and more specifically, in the transitioning of the nation of Israel from judges to kings. Scene 2, Beauty and the Fool. This story could be the inspiration for a new Disney fairy tale. A takeoff on Beauty and the Beast, but with a twist. The beauty in the story, named Abigail, has much in common with Belle. Abigail is smart, and she is being held captive by a wealthy beast. However, Abigail is trapped in a difficult marriage, not a castle. Her husband, the fool, holding her captive, has a heart of stone, and unlike the beast, his heart won't save him. It will kill him. Now, the hero to set the beauty free is a new improved Gaston with a heart for the Lord named David.
Chapter 25, continuing in verse 1. Then David moved down into the desert of Paran. A certain man in Maon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband was surly and mean in his dealings. He was a Calebite.
All right, we know all about David. Here's what we know about the two new characters in the story. Nabal's name means fool, which accurately describes his character. It may be an intentional distortion of his real name. We just don't know. It may be an intentional distortion of his real name and another insertion of Hebrew humor. Nabal is very rich and owns a lot of goats and sheep. He is from the house of Caleb, who was an amazing man. Go back and hear about him in Judges, Joshua, actually in Exodus too. This implies that Nabal was a bad branch of a good family. In other words, he's from the house of Caleb, good guy, but Nabal is not a good guy. And as Caleb was from the tribe of Judah, there was some kinship between Nabal and David, who was also from Judah. So Nabal and David may be related distantly. Lastly, Nabal is surly and mean, or in the King James Version of the Bible, churlish and evil. Now, Abigail is our heroine, and her name means one who is the cause of joy. I love that. Implying that her beauty is more than skin deep. She's intelligent and beautiful, or in the King James Version, of good understanding and countenance. The setting of the story is very specific. It is sheep shearing time, which during this period was a big event, more like a festival known for its feasting and revelry.
Continuing in verse 4, while David was in the wilderness, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now, I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my men, since we have come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them."
David, with a good heart, has got a good message for Nabal. And it wasn't out of the realm of what was expected. It was a loosely held custom at the time to reward those with provisions for their protection or assistance. Because there were no police in those days, David and his men had been protecting Nabal's shepherds and flocks from outlaws. So it was quite natural for David to ask Nabal to reciprocate with provisions from the festival. Scene 3, Nabal the imprudent and impulsive.
Verse 9, when David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name. Then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this, David? Who is son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?"
So David makes what he assumes is a friendly, reasonable request for food. After all, he and Nabal are from the same tribe. They're both from the tribe of Judah. Nabal has probably heard that he is the next king. It's a political thing. And Nabal has benefited richly from David's protection. There is absolutely no reason not to be generous to David and his men. But Nabal sees things differently and he responds arrogantly. He acts as if David is a nobody, calling him David, the son of Jesse, as Saul did when he was angry at David. He's also suggesting that David is not Saul's son-in-law because he could have called him David, the son-in-law of Saul, the king. He then suggests that David is a servant of Saul who has broken away from his master, implying that David is a defector of Israel. And his men, David's men, from who knows where, are not fit to eat his food. Nabal is living up to his name. How could he not know that David would be insulted by his words and that his 600 angry men were a force to be reckoned with? Nabal is so foolish that one has to wonder how Nabal became so rich. And how did he get a wife as great as Abigail? Perhaps he must have inherited the money is what I'm thinking, and his parents arranged his marriage. Which makes the parents super smart, because Abigail is the only reason Nabal lives through the night. Scene 4. Abigail, the respected and resourceful.
Verse 12. David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Each of you strap on your sword." So they did, and David strapped on his as well. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies.
David's furious, and who can blame him? Remember, he's done nothing wrong. He killed Goliath, fought for Israel, and served the king. Yet Saul has forced him to live as a criminal outcast, when in fact, he is the anointed future king of Israel. And now, once again, he has done the right thing, protected the people of his own tribe, and in return, this narcissistic Nabal treats him as if he is a worthless nuisance. David is tired of the disrespect. He will not grab the kingdom from Saul out of respect, but he will not tolerate such insubordination from such a fool as Nabal. He's going to kill him. Nabal may be a fool, but his servants are not. One senses that this is not the first time their master has offended someone, and they know exactly who can fix it.
Verse 14, one of the servants told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "David sent messengers from the wilderness to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us the whole time we were herding our sheep near them. Now, think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him."
Nabal's servant runs to the only one he trusts, Abigail, a woman. An interesting choice. How could a woman defend them against an army of men? He quickly reports the facts to her. "The master has insulted the leader of the men who have been good to us. So think and do something quick before we're all killed. Because Nabal is so wicked, I cannot go to him for help."
Verse 18, Abigail acted quickly. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I'll follow you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal.
The girl goes into action, and she acts quickly. She put her entire household to work. Now, because it was festival time, I'm thinking much of this food may have been prepared for the workers and families that are shearing the sheep. But Abigail wasted no time discussing her plan with Nabal. She skips him. She does the right thing despite any consequences to herself from her evil husband. Now, Abigail may have been forced to marry this fool. She was way too smart to want to marry him, is what I'm thinking. But she has not allowed Nabal's character to corrupt her own character. She has made the most of her position. She has the respect of her servants, and their allegiance has made her a resourceful leader. Scene 5. David, the warrior who wisely chose his weapons, meets Abigail, the woman who wisely chose her words. David and Abigail have a lot in common. Both are warriors ready to do battle to protect others. David fought for Israel. Abigail fights for her household. Both choose their weapons wisely. David carefully chose 5 stones for his battle with Goliath, and Abigail carefully chooses her words for her battle with David.
Verse 20. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless all my watching over this fellow's property in the wilderness, so that nothing of his was missing, and he has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "Pardon your servant, my lord. Let me speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. Please Pay no attention, my lord, to that wicked man, Nabal. He is just like his name. His name means fool, and folly goes with him. And as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my lord sent. And now, my lord, as surely as the Lord your God lives, and as you live, since the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, may your enemies and all who are intent on harming my lord be like Nabal.
So let's break down the first part of this speech. Abigail is so intuitive. She knows exactly why David is angry, and her approach, her words reflect that. She starts with words of respect because he feels disrespected. Nabal probably disrespected a lot of people. And we know from so many authors today that men need respect. How Abigail knew this, I don't know. But she immediately shows great respect by approaching him and bowing so deeply that her face is to the ground, and then she falls at his feet. Abigail treats David as if he is already king. The respect she shows is a counterbalance to Nabal's disrespect. So she's already like smoothing the way. She acknowledges that Nabal is a fool and explains that she did not see the men who asked for food. So, you know, she's in the clear and she's here to make it right. Then Abigail does something so spiritually clever with her words. She praises God for having stopped him from shedding blood. She draws David out of his anger and directs him back to God. Listen to what she said.
As surely as the Lord your God lives, and as you live, since the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands.
He hadn't stopped with the bloodshed. Remember, he's on the path to go kill. And she's saying, oh, but the Lord stopped you. She makes it impossible for David to go any further, to act on what he was going to do. How could he go against God? She flat out just said, God stopped you. Abigail shows great faith in God, and she gives God all the credit for saving her and her people. And faith in David is what she's showing too, that he too had enough faith that he would see the Lord's plans in her words.
Verse 27, and let this gift which your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's presumption. The Lord your God will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my Lord because you fight the Lord's battles and no wrongdoing will be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my Lord will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away from the pocket of a sling. When the Lord has fulfilled for my Lord every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him ruler over Israel, my Lord will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself.
She is so clever in her words and her imagery. That pocket of a sling, she's bringing him back to David and Goliath. The woman is a master. So to turn the tables just a bit more, Abigail takes four more well-aimed shots. She presents the gift of food that Nabal should have graciously given, so she makes right the wrong. Then she humbly takes the sin of her husband on herself and asks for forgiveness. So already David's feeling empathy for her. Oh yeah, look at her. She's so good. She affirms David is the future king with a lasting dynasty and that God will protect his life. So she's like now prophesying about his future as king. She's again redirecting him back to God. And she ends with the point that she opened with. God loves David and has a plan full of good promises, which he will give David because he has not avenged himself with bloodshed. Mic drop. How could David continue after that? It would be flat out defying God. Abigail, one defenseless woman, slays the king. She stopped David and 400 men dead in their tracks. Her only weapon was her wit and her words. Well, our heroine Abigail has just one more sentence to add before her voice drops off the pages of our book. She ends with this.
And when the Lord your God has brought my Lord success, remember your servant.
David, she begs, when God gives you that success that I have prophesied he will, remember me. It seems to me that all my favorite people in the Bible have asked to be remembered. Joseph was forgotten in prison and asked the cupbearer to remember him. Samson, when he was weak and blind, and also in prison, asked God to remember him. Hannah, Samuel's mother, asked God to remember her through tears poured out of a heart broken from infertility and persecution. Nehemiah asked God to remember him four times. And one of the criminals hanging on a cross next to Jesus asked Jesus to remember him. All of these were remembered. What a sweet, simple prayer this is for us. Lord, remember me.
Verse 32. David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request."
David listened and David turns from his vengeance. David has the makings of a great leader already. He gives the credit where it is due. God gets praise for sending Abigail, and Abigail is blessed for her good judgment. David and Abigail are so well matched, in my opinion. He saved his people and she saved hers. Both have integrity and both have courage. Well, David sends her home in peace with the promise that he has heard her and will remember her. And with the close of this scene, David has passed his second test in the wilderness. He overcame the temptation to avenge the evil Nabal with the aid of Abigail's good judgment. Together, they overcame evil with good. As we discussed in the last episode, Paul challenges us to overcome evil with good in Romans 12:21.
Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Well, right before that, Paul also said this in Romans 12.
Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, "It is mine to avenge, I will repay," says the Lord.
What happens next in Abigail's story is a perfect example of why we should leave room for God to avenge. It makes the story so much more interesting. Scene 5, Abigail's fairy tale ending.
Verse 36. When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things and his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died.
Okay, remember, it's sheep shearing time, and that means a party. Nabal, like Saul, enjoys playing king, and he was full of wine and full of himself. In the morning, Abigail reveals what Nabal missed in his drunkenness. Now, the NIV has tried to make the wording of how Nabal died less awkward than it really was. But in the process of doing that, we lose that Hebrew humor that I love. The Hebrew word for sober is "the wine has gone out of him." And Nabal's name sounds like the Hebrew word nebel, which means wineskin. So the verse in Hebrew would read like this. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of him, Nabal was nothing but a shriveled up wineskin. Okay, so there's another joke in here. One more on Nabal. The text implies that he had a hard heart in Hebrew. And in the end, he becomes like his heart, a stone, for 10 days before he dies. So I love Hebrew humor and regret that we miss it in our translations. My point is, God wants us to laugh, even in the difficult lessons of life. Nabal has what most think is a stroke when it says he becomes like a stone. That renders him paralyzed or in a coma. Now, the cause of the stroke is debated. It could have been fear of David and his army. It could have been anger at Abigail for humiliating herself before David, a man that Nabal obviously thought was beneath him. Or it could have been anger at Abigail for going behind his back and ordering the servants to provide food when he said, "No way." We don't know, but it doesn't matter because 10 days later, Nabal dies and there is no mystery about why. It clearly says in the Bible, we're told he was struck by God. And now out of the blue, the lovely, wise Abigail is available and on the market. And it doesn't take our hero longed to hear about it.
Verse 39, when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head." Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, "David has sent us to you to take you to become his wife." She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, "I am your servant, and I am ready to serve you and wash the feet of my Lord's servants." Abigail quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her 5 female servants, went with David's messengers and became his wife. David had also married Ahinoam Jezreel, and they both were his wives. But Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Paltiel, son of Laish, who was from Galim.
I picture Abigail is so pure, but Heather's voice is almost seductive there. Abigail has changed her tune. Okay, so the hero marries the heroine and they lived. Well, we don't know how they lived. We don't know if it was happily ever. But what we do have here is new intel on David's personal life that will become important and sadly comes after him being so good, because it's not good. It's bad. David has 3 wives so far. He's going to end up having 8. Now, there is no comment at this point in the Bible on David's polygamy. But did David miss Samuel's warning to Israel way back in chapter 8 that a king would take and take and take? And David just took another wife. Did David miss the instruction from Moses in Deuteronomy 17:17 about a king and what they're supposed to do? Listen.
Deuteronomy 17, starting in verse 14. "When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you and have taken possession of it and settled in it, and you say, 'Let us set a king over us like all those nations around us,' be sure to appoint over you a king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among your fellow Israelites. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not an Israelite. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them, for the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. He must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that of the Levitical priests. It is to be with him, and he is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, and not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites and turn from the law to the right or the left. Then he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom in Israel."
This is not a long list as far as kings go. The king must be chosen by God, check. He must be an Israelite, check. He must not acquire a lot of horses, wives, or gold. He must make a copy of the law. He must not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites, and he must not turn from the law. Perhaps David lacked a pen and paper in the wilderness and did not make a copy of the law, because David is acquiring wives. He has a heart for women, not just a heart for the Lord. And this is a crack in his heart for the Lord that will become a huge rift in the kingdom. So back to Abigail. Abigail was David's 3rd of 8 wives. Now, Michal was the first, but we read here that she is given by Saul to another man. Ahinoam is the 2nd wife and the mother of Amnon, the firstborn son. He will be the catalyst for the greatest personal tragedy in David's life. Abigail is the 3rd, and she too will have a son, but we don't know much about him. Maacah, Haggith, Abital, and Eglah are the 4th through the 7th. Bathsheba will be the last. Now, we don't know a lot about David's 8 wives. We know the most about Michal, Abigail, and Bathsheba. Michal did some good. She protected him, but we will see she lacks spiritual depth. Bathsheba will give David the heir to the kingdom, Solomon, but bathing on the roof and adultery show a lack of judgment. Of what we know of the 8 wives, it's Abigail who shines as David's best choice. Their story stands in stark contrast to Bathsheba's story. In Abigail's story, there is no adultery. She became available because God took her husband Nabal's life. In season 10, we'll learn in Bathsheba's story that David takes Uriah's life to cover up his adultery. To make David's sin greater, Abigail's husband was evil, but Bathsheba's husband that David killed was a good man. God removed the evil barrier to Abigail. It was a gift to David and a blessing to Abigail. While David, in a fit of lust, took Bathsheba and then killed a good man, the consequences that follow haunt David for the rest of his life.
What's a club without friends? If you're enjoying the Bible Book Club, why don't you share it? And then you can say,
Welcome to the club.
New episodes drop every Monday, and get all episodes now on Amazon Music. As always, head over to susanmee.com/Bible Book Club for show notes from today's episode. Bible Book Club is hosted by Susan Merrill and Heather Rubio, edited by Buck Buchanan, produced by Haley Mawat.